Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. I hope you've all been having a great week. As I always like to say, it's wonderful to be able to catch up with you at the end of the week. And it seems as though every week things get wackier and wackier in these United States of America. For those of you who are not familiar with me, I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the INS. Today, the mission of immigration, such as it has become under this administration, is no longer under the Justice Department as it was when I was with the INS, but is now under the aegis of an agency known as DHS, an agency that I've come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender, when you consider just how screwed up our government has been treating a host of issues. But in any event, if you want to read more about me rather than delve into my bio here on the air, please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. I have a bunch of my articles posted up there. And you can also visit with a wonderful website. I'm a senior fellow with an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. They are located in beautiful downtown and I presume sunny Santa Barbara, California. We are in the midst of a major drenching in New York, so I think they get the better of the deal right now. But in any event, Californians for Population Stabilization, headquartered in Santa Barbara, California on the Pacific Coast, their terrific website, capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. And as California goes, so goes the rest of the country. They have literally become the poster child when you consider what has happened to their economy, the issue with gangs, education. And let's be very clear about it. This isn't about bashing immigrants. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. So many people close to me are either immigrants or the children of immigrants. But I do like to make a distinction. The distinction that we need to make is that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We all love to have company visit, but not when folks decide to climb through our bedroom window at 3 o'clock in the morning. So again, please visit their website. They're great folks. They're great friends. Capsweb.org. There's a lot to talk about, and I decided that I would fly solo this evening so that we could get into some of the issues that I think are really critically important, because this is the news, quite frankly, that you're not going to hear anywhere else, period. Let me give you a good example of what I'm talking about. There was a story that kind of came and went quite quickly, and there was an incident where several aliens in Canada and one guy in the United States, two in Canada, one in the United States, were arrested about a month ago, and they were charged with putting together a conspiracy to carry out a terrorist attack to blow up a train somewhere in the vicinity of the U.S.-Canadian border. And this is an important story for a couple of reasons. The Gang of Eight, or eight gangsters, as I have come to refer to them, keep talking about the Mexican border. When the Mexican border is secure, the sun will shine, the men out there will not need Viagra, and everybody's going to be just happy. Listen, immigration is a system with lots of moving parts. We have a Mexican border, and it is problematic. There is such turmoil, violence in Mexico because of the drug trade, because of long-standing issues of corruption and so forth. It's a third-world country. And any time you have a first-world country next door to a third-world country, there's going to be a lot of pressure on that border. And that's what makes the U.S.-Mexican relationship so unique, because it is the only place on this planet where the first world and third world, in fact, do collide, and collide over an expanse of more than 2,000 miles of open border. And it really is open border. And I'm not criticizing my former colleagues of the U.S. Border Patrol. Those men and women are doing deadly, serious, dangerous work every day they go on duty. I just don't know where the greatest risk to them comes from. I'm not certain if their greatest risk comes from the cartels and the smugglers. Certainly, agents have been injured. Those stories you generally don't hear about, the rock throwing and all this other business. They've had to modify the vehicles that they use down there to protect them from rocks being thrown across the border. When the Border Patrol agents attempt to patrol the fence, they have to worry that somebody didn't string piano wire up to garrote them, you know, cut their throats. So it's a serious problem. But they face not much less of a serious threat from the U.S. government that puts them in harm's way in the first place. If they defend themselves, they may wind up getting prosecuted. This is a wacky situation because there is pressure on them to not do their job. So when Ms. Napolitano jumps up and says, well, the border is secure, it's never been more secure, everything is honky-dory, and you know, it's funny because I was on with Neil Cavuto a couple of months ago. Neil does a good job of talking about the issues that other people won't. I wish he would talk about it more frequently. A month ago I was on with Megyn Kelly over at Fox News. She also gave me an opportunity to put some information out there. But, you know, Neil asked me, he said, Mike, isn't it true that if arrests are down along the Mexican border, it means that there are fewer illegal aliens present in the United States? And the idea of that question kind of struck me, and I looked him in the eye and I said, hey, Neil, trying to figure out how many illegal aliens are present in the United States based on Border Patrol arrest statistics, it's kind of like trying to take attendance by asking people not present to raise their hands. Give that one some thought. And Neil kind of came to agree with me. I mean, this is patently ridiculous. Let me tell you the real metric for determining whether or not our border is secure. Look at the price of narcotics. Heroin and cocaine are not produced in the United States. If the border was secure, there would be no heroin, there would be no cocaine. At the very least, the price would go up if you presume that the demand is constant and the supply was choked off, supply and demand kicks in, and the price would climb through the roof. The price of drugs isn't going anywhere. If anything, it's probably dipping. That should tell you right off the bat, folks, that border is wide open. The drugs, and I hate even using the term drugs because it makes it sound like it's okay. Those chemicals that shouldn't be here are being smuggled into the United States with relative ease, which raises another issue. If you can get cocaine and heroin into the United States, could you not bring a weapon of mass destruction into the United States? So we hear this nonsense, the soothing words from Janet Napolitano that don't soothe me. They tick me off because we know that this is a bunch of nonsense. Why don't we deal with reality? The border is not secure, but it's not the only threat that we face. Let's go back to this Tunisian guy who, in concert with two other Tunisians, was fixing to derail a train on the U.S.-Canadian border to try to kill lots of people. And then there was actually a conversation among them that was tapped by authorities where they were discussing whether or not they could poison 100,000 Americans. Now, sometimes you read about these schemes and you say, well, you know, three drunks sitting in a bar decide they're going to poison a bunch of Americans. Ha ha, what's the punchline? This wasn't a ha ha. These three individuals are graduate students studying biology, nanotechnology, and so forth. One of these three, in fact, had been studying the HIV virus. So when you realize that these are highly educated, highly skilled individuals being trained in Canada, and their goal is to poison us, I don't know about you, I take them seriously. And what was remarkable is that one of these guys came to the United States to embed himself. He filled out an application for a visa, and when he set foot in the United States, he was arrested. He was actually arrested back in April. The news didn't hit until May. And I suspect, and I don't know for sure because I'm only able to deal with publicly available information, but it seemed to me that by the time he applied for the visa, his nefarious plans were known to authorities, so they made certain that he got to fill out the application so they could get him for lying on that visa application where it asked, have you ever been involved with a terrorist? Have you ever been involved with terrorist organizations and so forth? He said no, and whammo, they had him. And by the way, he was the one who radicalized the guy that had been studying the HIV virus up in Canada. So understand what we're talking about. Visa fraud is a problem. Now, in this case, this guy was grabbed as soon as he made the application for the visa, but it doesn't always work that way. There's another case, and this case has not been making the headlines at all. A newspaper called My San Antonio and another online website, The Blaze, reported on an individual by the name of Wissam Alouche, Lebanese national, who apparently had been a member of Hezbollah. Now, when I say apparently, maybe I should say allegedly. This isn't something that appeared in a supermarket tabloid. This was a statement that was contained in court papers filed by the FBI when they arrested him for lying on his application for United States citizenship. He's been a citizen of the United States for a couple of years. And his background is chilling because he had previously worked for a contractor that worked for the U.S. Army, and he was a translator working in Iraq with the U.S. Army. Now, I can tell you as an immigration agent, as you might expect, many of the people that I interacted with were not fluent English language speakers or writers or whatever. So we would work with translators. A translator becomes the mouth and the ears and the eyes of the people they work with. So if I'm working with a translator, he gets to see the person I'm talking to. If the person I'm talking to is a cooperator or an informant or for whatever reason is giving us information, the translator gets to see that person. The translator gets to see documents. The translator gets to see the agents. So here is a guy who, according to published reports, had been a member of Hezbollah, had allegedly killed an Israeli soldier back in the 80s. Clearly, this is not some peace-loving character. He is a terrorist. And he got a job as a translator with the U.S. Army, worked in Iraq. God only knows if people died because he was there. Maybe not. I'm not making any of the allegations. Certainly no charges have thus far been brought against him in connection with any such activity. So far, he has been charged with lying on his application for citizenship and on an application, apparently, for a security clearance, which is how it all came to light. Because this guy was looking to get a security clearance so he could work with the Department of Defense. Realize what I'm telling you. For a couple of years, since I believe it's around 2010, this individual has been a citizen of the United States of America. He evaded the scrutiny of our folks. Otherwise, he would never have been given a certificate of naturalization. So for about 3 years, this guy has been a U.S. citizen, and he got away with gaming the immigration process. This is serious stuff. He wasn't a Mexican. He wasn't running the Mexican border. He wasn't hiding in the shadows, as Chuck Schumer would like to tell you. You know, it was remarkable when the Tsarnaev brothers got into the shootout with the police, and one was killed, one's in custody. Schumer had the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, to go on the media circuit that Sunday and say, well, if they had passed comprehensive immigration reform, those Tsarnaev brothers couldn't have been here. They wouldn't have been hiding in the shadows. I doubt Chuck is listening to the program, but Chuck, if you are, you know it's a lie. Knock it off. You need to deal in reality where national security is concerned. Those two brothers were not hiding in the shadows. One was a naturalized United States citizen. He's dead. He's the young one. The older one, who never got citizenship, nevertheless had a green card, was a lawful immigrant. And again, I'm not making an accusation, but if you look at the facts, it would seem that the parents lied on their application for political asylum, which was how they got to stay in the United States in the first place. In order to apply for political asylum, an alien has to go to the authorities and say to them, I cannot return to my home country. If I go back to my home country, at the very least I face persecution, and at the very worst, they may kill me, they may torture me, they may imprison me because of race, religion, ethnicity, or political orientation. So think about it. These guys immediately went back to Russia after they got lawful status. Did they really have, to use the jargon of the law, credible fear? Hardly. They simply lied on their application. And this is not without precedence. In 1993, whether you remember or not, America was attacked not once but twice by terrorists. First, in January 1993, the United States operation at the Central Intelligence Agency was attacked by a Pakistani. And this individual had gotten was applying for political asylum and lied on his application. Now, I don't know whether or not he got political asylum or not. There's some dispute about that. There's different reports in the papers. But in any event, he lied on his application and rewarded us, he was a Pakistani, by shooting up the CIA, killing two CIA officers, wounding three others, and fleeing the country. Which, by the way, you should realize that international terrorists and transnational gang members and criminals have an escape hatch they can go through. And that is to simply go back to their home country. That's another benefit they have as compared with American criminals. This guy fled, came back. Then we have the first attack at the World Trade Center. And again, we had every one of these characters committing visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud. One of them also filed for political asylum and lied. Another guy, Mahmoud Abu Lima, claimed to have been an agricultural worker, because that was one way of getting amnesty in 1986 under the Reagan amnesty. And by the way, Chuck Schumer was one of the primary authors, architects of the agricultural amnesty program, and he's repeated that mistake again in the current bill, S-744. Absolutely mind-boggling. So understand what we're dealing with. You have a situation where Chuck Schumer does this and does it again. It's absolutely incredible. And if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, they warn about this. Let me read to you something that's in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This can be found on page 98. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. This was in the report written by the 9/11 Commission staff. So now we have the Tsarnaev brothers' political asylum. Now we have the president under the aegis of a program known as DACA, D-A-C-A, Deferred Action Childhood Arrival, processing to date, from what I've seen in a number of newspaper articles, over 500,000 undocumented aliens whose true identities are questionable, getting official identity documents, and wait till you hear how thorough the interview is. There is none. So DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, is simply processing applications to give illegal aliens identity documents without even subjecting them to a face-to-face interview. The 9/11 Commission and the 9/11 Commission staff were very clear. If you give immigration status to people, you could be aiding, abetting, and enabling terrorists to embed themselves in America. So what do? We run this bureaucratic machinery at warp speed, kind of like Lucy at the Bonbon Factory, which in fact was the title of one of my commentaries for CAPS. They run the damn thing at warp speed, and hundreds of thousands of aliens, who, by the way, may not be children. It's astonishing that they refer to it as children. The age cutoff is 31. When I do speaking engagements around the country, and if you folks are interested in having me come to your neck of the woods, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. You can reach out to me through Californians for Population Stabilization. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Washington with Act for America. Then in July, I'm going to be heading to Arizona. And right after Arizona, we're going to be we have a real exciting event coming up. And before I go further, let me tell you about this event. You may want to take out a pen, paper, or crayon or something. But on July the 12th, There's going to be a demonstration in Washington. Hopefully it will involve Americans from coast to coast and border to border. It's the D.C. March for Jobs. It is to protest against the amnesty that S-744 represents. And this is being spearheaded by the Black American Leadership Alliance and other organizations and individuals. July 15th, it's a Monday. Mark it on your calendar. I'm going to be talking about it on every one of my programs until we finally do it. I've been honored. I've been asked to address the crowd. I plan to be there, and I hope you plan to be there July 15th in Washington at Freedom Plaza in the center of the Capitol. We have got to get our voices heard. This insanity that is going on right now is endangering national security. It is endangering public safety, and it is absolutely endangering the ability of American workers to support themselves and their families. It's absolutely astonishing. But you're not hearing this on the major news programs. When was the last major news program that you heard really get into the nuts and bolts of how comprehensive immigration reform would make it so much more difficult for Americans to find work? You're not hearing that. What you're hearing is, it's long overdue, we need to do it, let's have at it. I went to an event today and I heard a gentleman by the name of Cohen, forgive me, I don't remember his first name. His wife, I'm sure you've heard of, Meredith Vieira, she's a journalist, she's also the host on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and he's a journalist. The poor guy is suffering from MS. He's in terrible shape, very strong challenges, but an amazing lifetime of achievement. And he was talking about television, or he was interviewed about television today at the event where I was. And he said, when you want to think about TV news today, buy a radio. And the audience kind of laughed, but there isn't much to laugh about. Most televised news programs are not news. Most of them, in my judgment, masquerade editorial stuff as a news report. Unfortunately, too many Americans don't have enough insight or critical thinking to understand how they're being hoodwinked. And this journalist said, listen, you gotta find other sources of information. You're not finding it in TV today. And nothing could be truer than that. And that's the reason that I'm here. It's so important to get information that's not being provided. It is increasingly difficult for the average American to get the news. You know, the founding fathers knew how important the news was. That's why the First Amendment deals with freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the right to seek redress of grievances, and the right for peaceable assemblage. Because they understood, you cannot have a democracy if you're not informed. Who do you vote for if you don't know what the issues are? And most people are lazy. Most people think that our politicians, or maybe they don't think the politicians in general are doing a good job. You know, they hate Congress but love their congressman. Ask so many New Yorkers about Chuck Schumer. And Schumer, oh my God, he's always on TV. He's looking out for us. Boy, he's a great guy. Well, Schumer got together with a guy I used to have a lot of respect for by the name of Orrin Hatch, and they want to quadruple the number of temporary workers with high-tech visas. I mean, this is mind-boggling. There was a press release that was issued jointly by Senator Sessions and Senator Vitter, and Senator Sessions quoted me years ago when I did a bunch of hearings on comprehensive reform. I called it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, the idea of giving millions of illegal aliens identity documents. He liked it so much he quoted me from the floor of the Senate during the floor debate. So Senator Sessions, Senator Vitter, joined by Congressman Brooks and my friend Lou Barletta, issued a press release. And let me tell you what it says. This is the headline on the press release. Senators and congressmen comment on new report showing Gang of Eight plan adds four times more guest workers than the 2007 bill. and that one was going to add lots more. So what we're really talking about is opening the floodgates, and this isn't just about people doing menial work, and that's bad enough. That's bad enough. This is high-tech workers. And what Schumer and Hatch want to do is eliminate the requirement in the law that now exists. And that requirement states that you may not hire a foreign worker legally if that worker is competing with an American, or if in hiring that foreign worker, you would lower the wages or worsen the working conditions for American workers. That makes sense. That's a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Abraham Lincoln so eloquently described during the Gettysburg Address. Don't hire foreign workers if there are Americans ready, willing, and able to do the job. It's in the law. Don't hire foreign workers if, in so doing, this would create pressure on wages and enable employers to reduce the working standards under which people work. Can't do it. Hire Americans first, protect their wages, protect their working conditions. It makes sense. It's representative government. Schumer comes along, and guess what he says? We need to strike that. We need to be able to have companies hire anybody they want, even foreign workers, even if Americans are ready, willing, and able to do the job. What this will open the door to, ladies and gentlemen, is a situation where an unscrupulous employer can go to his American who has worked for him for years and say to that American, hey, Charlie, I'm paying you $80,000 a year as an engineer. I don't want to get rid of you. I think you're a great worker. But I just found this guy in India who's willing to work for half your salary. So if you want to keep your job, you're going to have to underbid him. He wants to work for 40. Will you take the job for 39? So we're going to wind up in a bidding war, not to go up as we've seen on the Mecum Auto Auction or any other auction where, you know, some guy bids 1,000 and some other guy says 5,000 and some other guy says 10. This auction runs backwards. Well, if this bill passes and becomes law the way it stands, an employer would be able to go and hire foreign workers and displace Americans, and there would be no prohibition against it. So you could wind up bidding for your current job and have your wages lowered because some guy in another country is willing to do your job for less. This is what Chuck Schumer is looking to do to the average American worker, along with the Gang of Eight, or as I like to call them, the Eight Gangsters. I have a question I have to ask you. I want you to think about it. Because as soon as I stand up and say we need to enforce immigration laws, there's a bunch of websites out there that truly are not looking out for America or Americans. They make these ridiculous, outrageous allegations and assertions. Where in the world did it become anti-immigrant to be pro-American? Think about that. America was built by immigrants, okay. But the idea is that we control immigration to make certain that we don't undermine American workers. That's how America built the middle class. That's how we constructed for ourselves the American dream. And today, Chuck Schumer and the Gang of Eight, Orrin Hatch, and others are saying, hey, you know what? We got a great idea. Let's allow in millions of foreign workers, even if in so doing we will cause Americans to lose their jobs. How insane is that? How big a betrayal is that? Why in the world would the government of the United States be willing to trash the middle class? And I will tell you why they're willing to do it. Because of what I call legalized bribery, known as campaign contributions. If you are taking money from corporations to do their bidding, that's what they want. Why else would someone give politicians tons of money, unless they're really so ideologically motivated they feel strongly? That may happen. But for the most part, you know, the guy that gives a politician running for office $100 or $200, he doesn't expect anything in return. You write a check for thousands of dollars, you're expecting something in return. What we are doing, folks, is destroying the middle class. I just wrote a commentary where I referred to this as the fencing of America, and not the usual fence, you know, the thing that you put up along a border, that we've had enough debate about that, and it's still not being done. But fencing in law enforcement can mean the sale of stolen property. The burglar steals the jewels, and he hands them off to a fence who finds a buyer for them. So the guy that sells it is known as a fence. The process of selling stolen property is known as fencing. That's what these folks are doing. This is the fencing of America. They're giving us the fence that we don't want. I hope that you will tell your friends and your neighbors. I hope you will put emails out there. July 15th, Monday, 9:30 in the morning, Washington, D.C. It's important that we show up. It's important that we play this game of can you hear us now? This legislation would be devastating. And by the way, in 1986, we were told that about a million and a half aliens would participate in the amnesty program. We wound up with well over 3 million. It was different numbers on it, but I believe it was actually closer to 4 million. It was going to be 1 million, almost 4 million. Roughly three times as many actually got lawful status as was originally estimated. Today we're being told that about 12 million would participate in comprehensive immigration reform. What happens, ladies and gentlemen, if instead of 12 million, we have 36 million who then could immediately bring their families here? Wives, children. And by the way, there's another bit of sleight of hand being done, deceitfully, which seems to be how Congress does business these days, deceitfully. They're saying, well, we're going to put them on the back of the line. And they will. The back of the line for U.S. citizenship. Is that really why they ran the border in the first place? They want to work. That line is only a couple of days long. Because while they're waiting, they will be able to work, bring their families here, travel freely around the country, get identity documents without an interview and without any way of verifying not only their name, but even what country they're from. Now, let's go back again to this issue about Hezbollah, the allegation that this guy, Mr. Alouche, had been in Hezbollah. I'm not making the allegation, the FBI is. I'm just reporting on what's in the papers, folks. But we also know that Hezbollah is growing in influence throughout Latin America. We know that there are Iranian shock troops, the Quds, and members of Hezbollah flying on flights every week from Tehran, Iran, right into Caracas, Venezuela. We know there are terror training camps on the tri-border region of Brazil, where Brazil, Argentina, and Paraguay meet. We know that there's a growing presence of Hezbollah in Argentina. So what would prevent somebody in Hezbollah from running the border, getting into the United States, and claiming to be from Latin America? They'd wind up getting an official identity document in a false name, where even if their own name is on every terror watch list in the world. There's a website out there that referred to me as being anti-immigrant. Nothing could be further from the truth. Every year, we admit over 1 million lawful immigrants. Every year, we naturalize more than 500,000 aliens. By the way, it's an interesting number. Think about this thing. We're going to put them on the back of the line for citizenship. Only about half of the aliens who get green cards ever go on to naturalize. The brass ring for them is a green card. It's the ability to work in the United States and travel freely back and forth across our borders. That line is not 12 years long, as they're talking about. It's all about deception. And you should realize something else. Immigration laws don't distinguish Latino from black, from white, from Asian, from purple, from polka dot or stripes. The immigration laws are completely blind about that. So, and also realize that America's minorities are suffering far greater rates of poverty than America's non-minority population. The blacks are getting hammered the worst, followed by the Latinos. So when I say we need to enforce the immigration laws, this isn't about saying I hate people with brown skin. Quite the contrary. I'm sick of people being exploited. I've raided enough places as an immigration agent where I saw horrific exploitation. where women were coerced into having sex with their boss on the lunch break if they wanted to keep their job, where people lived in squalor, where people were treated inhumanely and swindled out of their money. I could go on for days about the abuses that I saw during my 30-year career, but that's the game the other side plays. We'll make accusations and see what happens then. Well, I'm not afraid of the accusations because I know the truth. You know, during that dark, reprehensible era of American history, when slavery was considered business as usual, if you didn't want to own a slave, did that mean you didn't like black people? Or perhaps might it have meant that you didn't like to see people enslaved? The rhetoric, the nonsense, we need to learn some critical thinking skills here, folks. And really and truly, we need to grow a pair. Forgive me. I don't know any polite way of saying it. We've become a spineless country. We need to stand up to those people who make the outrageous accusations, get in their face nonviolently. I'm not advocating we go out there and have a barroom brawl. But we have got to be really clear about this, that this is not about discrimination. This is not about racism. It's about common sense. We have millions upon millions of American workers unemployed and underemployed under such circumstances. Why in the world would you bring more workers into a labor pool that can't find work? How many people do you sell tickets to for an airplane when the seats are already taken? And there's nothing wrong with saying that we want to care for our fellow Americans first, so long as we care for all Americans, irrespective of race, irrespective of religion, irrespective of ethnicity. If you're an American, we need to look out for you. And that goes to this issue about the term that the other side doesn't want you to use, unless we're talking, of course, about the DREAM Act. And what's the term that we're talking about? It's the word alien. They don't want you to use the word alien, but the A in the DREAM Act is alien. So because they could conjure up this image of the American dream, they held their nose and said, well, we'll use the word alien. The word alien is not an insult. It's not a term of denigration or anything like that. The term alien under the law simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. That's what an alien is by law. That's the definition. Any person not a citizen or national of the United States. Could you please tell me how in the world that's an insult to say someone's an alien? It's not that it's an insult. It's a matter of providing clarity to this debate. It's not that the aliens are hiding in the shadows. It's that our adversaries, the immigration anarchists, are keeping the truth from the American people in the shadows, and they're doing it by deceptive language that's absolutely Orwellian, and they're doing it by intimidation. That's what's going on. That's why the word alien has been taken from the vernacular. Not because it's an insulting word, not because it says you smell bad or you're stupid or you're immoral. It simply states that you are not a citizen. And once you make that distinction, all the other tumblers, so to speak, fall into alignment. Once you understand that the sole purpose for the immigration laws is to protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans, then you have clarity. With that clarity, nobody would ever stand up who's reasonable and say, great, let's help foreign workers before we help American workers. Let's get foreign workers or aliens off of welfare, and believe me, they are on welfare. Don't think they aren't. That's the other beauty. Oh, these folks that we would legalize wouldn't be eligible. Well, the states administer those programs, and most states like New York and Illinois and California have a don't ask, don't tell policy. So they can say what they want. These folks absolutely will be getting welfare. And by the way, there's an interesting point to be made. My friend Kim Dvorak, who interviewed me on Skype on some of these issues, raised this point. We're being told that the aliens would have to pay back taxes. Who do you think is going to investigate it? You're dealing with somebody who's probably used 8 different false names, 5 different Social Security numbers, and we're dealing with tens of millions of applications. Do you think anyone is really going to figure out what these folks owe? And I guarantee you there will be a provision in the law for a waiver. So the guy will check off a box and say, I have no money, and they'll say, okay, we forgive you. Don't you try it, though. Don't try this at home, because the IRS will come finding you. I assure you they will. So understand just how wacky this is. The accusations are flying fast and furious, not unlike that gun case that somehow has gone under the radar with all the other adventures going on with this wacky administration. But in point of fact, there is nothing anti-immigrant about securing borders. It's the immigrant communities, and not just the Latin American immigrant communities, but the Asian and the Russian and the European, that suffer the greatest violence at the hands of transnational criminals. Because that's where these thugs operate. I know. I used to make arrests in those neighborhoods. And it wasn't just in the communities from Latin America. It was the Asian brothels and the gambling houses and the extortion and the murders that we worked with the police to solve. The same thing with the Russian mob, the same thing with the Jamaican posses. This has nothing to do with race, but the most vulnerable people in America are the members of those ethnic immigrant communities. It is not anti-immigrant to enforce the laws that were designed in the first place to keep out the criminals, the terrorists, and the thugs. It's insane that people are falling for these ridiculous arguments. This is dopier than the fools who bought the pet rock, and if that wasn't dopey enough, they then went out and bought the training manual for the pet rock. Those of you old enough certainly remember it. If you're not old enough, go look up the pet rock online. You'd be amazed at how dumb people can be. And they're so dumb that there are people who are actually falling for comprehensive immigration reform. There is nothing in comprehensive immigration reform that would address the failings of the immigration system. It would exacerbate them. I want to give you something to think about. Throughout America, a feeling about drunk driving evolved. When I was a kid, John Wayne, who was a great actor but not a great American hero, I don't know how, again, another example of advertising. John Wayne, great American hero. I thought he was a great actor, and from what I understand from some actors I met and others who knew him, he was a hell of a nice guy. Not a hero. He didn't go to war. He wasn't Audie Murphy. He wasn't Lee Marvin. This is patently ridiculous. But in any event, I remember him being on the Johnny Carson show back in the 70s and laughing like crazy, and they were all yucking it up because he said he had been to some party and was so drunk that God must have been his co-pilot. And he went on at length about how he couldn't even figure out what button to push in the elevator to get to the garage, so God only knows how he managed to get into his car and drive home without killing somebody. And the audience was rolling on the floor laughing, and Johnny Carson was laughing and wiping tears from his eyes, and everybody was having a lot of fun joking about drunk driving. There's nothing funny about drunk driving. It kills thousands of people a year. Now, over time, public opinion went in a different direction. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers did a great job. They got people to understand that there's nothing humorous about a guy who's falling down drunk or even moderately inebriated getting behind the wheel of a moving piece of machinery that weighs a couple of tons and hurtles down the road at 60 miles an hour. The solution was not amnesty. The solution was to tighten up on the law, to say, okay, what used to be acceptable for blood alcohol level is too high. Let's make it 0.08. And now there are some people talking about lowering it further still. If you're going to drive, don't drink. Very simple. And so what they've done to discourage it is pass tougher laws and enforce the laws. Get caught drunk driving in New York. You get arrested. They take your car. They hit you with a humongous fine. They're going to put you in jail. You'll probably lose your license. They're going to seize your vehicle. That's pretty stringent stuff. And, you know, I remember as a kid driving home from a Saturday night date, it was scary because you'd be on the highway zooming along at the speed limit, maybe above the speed limit, and suddenly everybody would come to a screeching halt. Everyone's going 10 miles an hour, and there isn't much traffic. And then you realize some drunk is doing S-turns down the highway. He's swerving from the left lane to the extreme right and back again, and everyone's afraid to pass him, so everyone slows down. Those incidents are far and few between now. Why? Because they cracked down, and people became convinced that there's a problem. Same thing with seatbelt usage. When they first came up with seatbelts, very few people wore them. And over time, between public affairs, public relations campaigns, and commercials, and summonses, people almost always now wear seatbelts. It's rare for somebody not to wear a seatbelt. Common sense should be enough. but sometimes common sense doesn't work. The immigration laws were designed to protect lives and jobs of Americans. That's a pretty fundamental concept. Now we're having arguments over how to reward people who violate those laws that were supposed to protect us. Imagine what would happen to burglary rates in your community if the police said, you know what, we're going to give you an amnesty. If you break into someone's house and you're caught walking off with the guy's gold Rolex watch, you get to keep it, and we're not going to prosecute you. I wouldn't want to live in that community. But that's what an amnesty is. If you break the law, there will be no consequences. If you break the law, we won't do anything to you. What do you think that would do? What do you think would happen if you told people, yeah, we have a speed limit, but you know what? We're not going to give anybody tickets. Today is ticket-free Saturday. I guarantee you every kid in the county will be out there in their new Corvette or Porsche or whatever racing each other because they were told, hey, there's no consequences. Well, it's gotten actually worse. Because here you have the President of the United States, aided and abetted by the eight gangsters and others, saying, you know what, if you run the border, we don't want you to, but once you get here, we want to give you the right to work, we want to give you the right to bring your family here, don't run the border, but if you get across that border, we want you. What kind of insanity are we talking about? And most television programs will have people come on and extol the virtues. But they have a good reason for it. And you know what? I understand why they're doing it. They're immoral scoundrels. They don't care about the harm they will do to America. They are anti-American. And any program that advocates for comprehensive reform is anti-American, anti-American worker. But these are programs that are hoping to garner more listeners, more viewers, more readers, so that way they can charge their advertisers more. Understand the profit motive is very, very strong. There are people among us who know the price of everything and the value of nothing. It is not in the interests of the average working American to have the labor market inundated by millions of additional workers when we can't find enough jobs for Americans. Every month, the Bureau of Labor Statistics announces how many jobs were created, and everyone gets all excited, and the stock market went up because they said, wow, they created 175,000 new jobs this month. Wow, is this great. Well, guess what? We wound up with at least that many new workers in the United States that month, or potential workers, believe it or not. We bring in just under 100,000 new resident aliens each and every month. Now, yes, some of them are children, so they're not working, but eventually, God willing, they will grow up, they will join the labor force, and there are people that have been here for many years who are reaching the age where they can work. So understand how that conveyor belt is working. Even that five-year-old in another 20 years or 15 years is going to be joining the labor pool. So every month, we are admitting 100,000, roughly, new immigrants with green cards. Every month, we are admitting tens of thousands of people with H-1B and other so-called temporary work visas. We are bringing in more foreign students. Right now, there are 850,000 foreign students in the United States. Many of them get employment authorization. Every year, we admit over 400,000 new foreign students. Again, many of them get permission to work. Then we have kids coming in and young people coming in under the Foreign Exchange Visitor Program, the J program. That's tens of thousands also. So when you start adding up all these numbers, and that doesn't even include the illegal aliens, the people who come in with tourist visas or come in under the visa waiver program and work illegally. God only knows what that number looks like. So now they want to double or triple or quadruple or God knows what the number of H-1Bs and J visas and all these other programs. And meanwhile, everyone gets excited when they say we created 175,000 jobs and we're bringing in at least that many foreign workers, and they're not even telling you how many of those jobs are at minimum wage. Imagine coming home all excited. Wow, I got a job. It's $9 an hour. Wow, that's really great. Lots of luck trying to support yourself or your family on that job. But nobody even talks about what the wage is for the jobs being created. But no matter how many jobs they're creating, that steady drumbeat is beating every day. Every day, thousands more coming in legally to work in the United States. This is a prescription for catastrophe. And so you look at the national security implications, you look at what they're doing, and you really have to ask yourself, why in the world we the people are allowing it to happen? And so I come back to this thing about July 15th. Please, folks, I don't know what your summer plans are, but it would really be a wonderful thing if you could come to Washington on the 15th of July, that's about 6 weeks from now. Spend a day in Washington. Spend a day in Washington. Make your voice heard. If you have children, we're talking about their future. If you have grandchildren, we're talking about your grandchildren's future. We're certainly talking about your future. This is not the way it's supposed to work. There's another wacky story. I don't know if I got to this last week, so I have to quickly go over this one. The Atlantic Wire a couple of weeks ago ran a story. This headline just blew me away. How did the U.S. Marshals lose suspected terrorists in the witness protection program? You know, we put people in the witness protection program who become cooperators for law enforcement. They are fearful of being killed by their former cohorts. So we relocate them. The government does. It's under the Justice Department. It's run by the U.S. Marshal Service. They move them to another part of the country, and they give them brand new identities, and they hide them in plain sight. It almost sounds like the president's DACA program, doesn't it? The Deferred Action Program. We give them a new identity. Goodness gracious, you can't make this up. Well, this thing is so screwed up, I've decided we're going to rename the Witness Protection Program the Witless Protection Program. There were a couple of these guys who had been terrorists, and somehow they lost track of them. But that wouldn't be bad enough. They think they might not be in the country anymore, but they're just not sure. And it's a little difficult for them to find out, and you're not going to believe this. You really aren't going to believe this. But it turned out that they're not certain, or in fact they know, they didn't give the names that these people were given to the folks who compiled the no-fly list. I want you to stop and think. I mean, this is staggering. You have terrorists who were put in the witness protection program. They were supposed to have left the country. They're not sure if they did. They gave them brand new identities to protect them, but then they didn't bother to tell the people who compiled the no-fly list what their new names are. Can you make this stuff up? I mean, this is like an endless manure factory. I don't know how else to describe it. You want to be able to look at something and say, well, there's a well-run program. And I keep looking for a well-run program, and we keep coming up empty. Let me just read this to you. This was in one of the articles concerning this case. As of March 2013, the Justice Department was reviewing more than 18,000 witness protection program case files to determine whether more known or suspected terrorists were admitted to the program. They don't even know. War on terror, okay? We're going to track everyone's phone. And I'm not quite as upset about just phone numbers and looking to see where connections were made. But think of what they are doing and what they have been doing since 9/11 in the name of national security to erode any expectation of privacy or freedom. But meanwhile, they're going through a list of 18,000 people in the program because they don't know if any of them might be terrorists. And then it continues to say that the summary notes that as such, the number of terrorists lost or unaccounted for, quote, may not be complete and may continue to evolve. How do you lose a terrorist? Is this like a contact lens? Do they have people at the Justice Department crawling around on all fours looking for a terrorist? It's the dopiest situation you could imagine. And finally, they said, now, this is the corker, the IG summary, IG Internal Affairs, the Inspector General. The IG summary said that although the Marshal Service was giving known as suspected terrorists who participated in the WITSEC program, Witness Security Program, and their dependents, new names and identity documentation, the Justice Department, quote, was not authorizing the disclosure to the Terrorist Screening Center, which operates the terrorist watch list that helps to provide information to the Transportation Security Administration's no-fly and selectee list. Quote, therefore, it was possible for known or suspected terrorists to fly on commercial airplanes in or over the United States and evade one of the government's primary means of identifying and tracking terrorist movements and actions, the summary said. What in the world is going on? I mean, this is like the Keystone Cops. They have terrorists that may be out there. They don't know if they're on the no-fly list or if they're on the terror lists. They don't know what names they gave them. So we have terror watch lists that don't include the new identities that we gave to terrorists. If you don't think this is insanity, check for a flatline EEG. You have got to be out of your mind to be able to read this and not lose your mind. You know, it's just astonishing. My father, may he rest in peace, both of my parents gave me such great wisdom. Sadly, they both died while I was in college. But my dad used to say to me that I would instruct people as to how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. I want you to let your elected representatives, whether it's in City Hall, the state capitol, wherever you live, make it clear to them what you're willing to accept and what you're not willing to accept. I was watching this thing with the Tea Party and the IRS, and I'm not a Tea Partier, although I've been given the privilege of addressing the Tea Party convention on two separate occasions in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Joe Dugan and company have done such an amazing job. Joe, if you're listening, I want you to know that you and your neighbors in South Carolina could not have done more to make me feel more at home or more welcome. And at the end of the day, I don't care what your political affiliation is. And this is something that I want to spend just a couple of minutes on before we wrap it up for this evening. The people who oppose the average American citizen, and we could start with anybody favoring the comprehensive immigration reform legislation. There is nothing in that legislation that would benefit American workers or their families. Nothing. It would make our country less safe. It would make it easier for the bad guys to embed themselves. It would create unfair competition for people who can't find work today. There's no good news in that bill. We know what went wrong with the Reagan bill, the Reagan amnesty. Number one, it was just a bad idea to do this under any circumstances, but it was the lack of enforcement resources. There isn't a penny in that bill for more enforcement. This nonsense about the Mexican border is as close as they're willing to get to interior enforcement. There is nothing in it about interior enforcement. There's nothing in it about going after massive fraud. There's nothing at all. All it is a handout followed by a handout followed by a handout followed by another handout. The big argument is how many people are going to be given handouts and how many Americans are going to take it in the neck or some other part. So you look at all of this that's happening, and so we need to, as Americans, come together with the understanding that whether we're Democrats or Republicans, conservatives or liberals, independents or libertarians, we, the people, are Americans. And people who disagree with your politics, your neighbors who may disagree with you, are not your enemies. The First Amendment talks about the right for peaceable assemblage. The Founding Fathers, in their wisdom, understood the need for debate and discourse. And what does that mean? It means that the people that you disagree with, I don't care if it's about abortion, either side. I don't care if it's about gay rights, either side. I don't care if it's about school prayer. Either side. Everybody is entitled to his or her belief. You don't have to agree with them. But they have as much right to their opinion as you have to yours. They're not your enemy. They are Americans, just as we are, practicing their rights, celebrating their rights by having their own ideas. What you need to see in those people is not adversaries, but allies, if only you can educate them to your side. Whichever the side is. We need to have honest discussions with our neighbors. And I hope you notice, I'm not taking sides on the debate except for one debate. Because the one issue that should not be partisan at all is the need to secure America's borders and enforce America's immigration laws. Of all the threats we face, it's those failures that are our greatest threat. And I'm not saying this simply because I'm an immigration agent and it's quote-unquote my issue. The immigration laws and the way we enforce them are the mirror image of what the U.S. military is charged with doing. Our valiant soldiers, and I use the term soldier generically, whether they're in the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, the Army, the Coast Guard, America's fighting men and women, have a primary mission, and that mission is to keep our nation's enemies as far from our shores as possible. When they can't stop them, it's up to the Border Patrol to make certain they don't get past our borders. It's up to the men and women of ICE to enforce the immigration laws so that if they get past the Border Patrol, we're still backstopping that operation as well. This is nothing less than a matter of national security and common sense. This isn't a minor issue. This isn't about people who want to mow your lawns or wash dishes in greasy spoon diners. The average terrorist embeds himself in our country by getting a nondescript job. I've made this point at congressional hearings. A day or two before a terrorist attack, a terrorist is likely to be hiding in plain sight by attending a university or going to his job. And it's very often a job that provides camouflage and mobility. We can have all sorts of disagreements about the other issues. The one issue that we better not have disagreement on is whether or not America's borders need to be secured. And those borders are in all 50 states, you know, northern as well as the southern border. Seaports and international airports are also components of America's borders. That's something all Americans must agree on. We must agree on the fact that if there are jobs, those jobs must go to American and lawful immigrant workers. That we can agree on, too. That's what representative democracy is supposed to be about. That's what a government by the people and for the people is supposed to be about. I want you folks to focus on this. They are about to vote in the Senate on comprehensive immigration reform. You need to put in them the fear of the electorate. It's not enough to call up a member of Congress and say, please don't vote for that bill. They don't care. You need to say to them, if you vote for the bill, if you do that, I will work tirelessly. I will dedicate every waking moment of my life until the next election to see to it that you are voted out of office. I don't care who runs against you. I don't care if they scrape somebody out of a Looney Tune asylum and prop them up. If that person opposes you, not only will I vote for him, I will give him money. Not only will I give him my money, I will go door to door throughout my neighborhood and ring every doorbell I can find, knock on every door I can find, and get the money to see to it that your opponent defeats you in the next primary. And if, God forbid, you make it through the primary, I will nail your tail come the general election. Those are the words they understand. And you need to have your friends and neighbors reach out to those members of Congress and give them that message. We will go to war in the voting booth against you. Has to be clear. Not menacing, not threatening. That will scare them enough because these people are vote whores. I always want to be a little bit humorous when I can be, if there's some humor to be found. I want you to think about the two similarities between the oldest professions. Besides the fact that prostitutes and politicians, both professions begin with the letter P, there's another common ground. For the right price, they will assume any position. Something for you to think about. I'm so glad you were able to join me this Friday evening. I hope wherever you are, the weather is cooperative. I hope that the floods aren't too big a deal for you if you're in the Northeast as we are here. But I do hope you have a great spring weekend, everybody. I want you to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please get involved. Please reach out to your elected representatives. And by the way, if your elected representative, like Jeff Sessions, like Chuck Grassley, like Steve King, like Senator Vitter, or my friend Lou Barletta, if you're fortunate enough to have a politician like that, call them up and thank them. Show them support. Let them know that you stand with them, because it could be awfully lonely standing up against these thugs who are trying to run roughshod over this country, the American people, and the Constitution of the United States. So please be supportive of those rare politicians who are doing the right thing. They need to hear from us also. Meanwhile, I will wish all of you a great weekend. Look forward to joining you again next week at the same place. Check out those two websites, please, michaelcutler.net, and to my great friends in California and Santa Barbara, please check out capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization. Again, great weekend, everybody. See you next week.